death of a city. It was such a beautiful city, Biska thought. An observer's eyes could not avoid the overwhelming beauty. As the city doctor called to treat the city, Biska found the beauty heartbreaking. He found his thoughts drawn again and again to the individuals who called this place home. 241,000 humans who now face the prospect of homeless lives. Biska stared across open water at the city, from the wooded peninsula that protected the inner harbor. The low light of late afternoon cast a ruddy glow on the scene. His eyes probed for flaws, but from this distance not even the tastefully applied patches could be seen. "Why was I chosen for this?" he asked himself. Then, if the damn fools had only built an ugly city. Immediately he rejected this thought. It made as much sense as to ask why Mieri, the intern who stood near the ornithopter behind him, personified such feminine beauty. Such things happened. It was the task of a city doctor to recognize inescapable facts and put them in their proper context. Biska continued to study the city, striving for the objective-subjective synthesis that his calling demanded. The city's builders had grafted their ideas onto the hills below the mountains with such a profound emotional sense of harmony that no trick of the eye could reject their creation. Against a backdrop of snow peaks and forests, the builders had rightly said, "The vertical threatens a man. It puts danger above him. A man cannot relax and achieve human balance in a vertical setting." Thus they had built a city whose very rightness might condemn it. Had they even suspected what they had created? Biska thought it unlikely. How could the builders have missed it? He asked himself. Even as the question appeared in his mind, he put it down. It served no purpose for him to cry out against the circumstances that said he must make this decision. The city doctor was here on behalf of the species, a representative of all humans together. He must act for them. The city presented an appearance of awesome solidity that Biska knew to be false. It could be destroyed quite easily. He had but to give the order, certifying his decision with his official seal. People would rage against fate, but they would obey. Families would be broken and scattered. The name of this place would be erased from all but the city doctor's records. The natural landscape would be restored, and there would remain no visible sign that a city such as this one had stood here. In time, only the builders of cities would remember this place, and that as a warning. Behind him, Mieri cleared her throat. She would speak out soon, Biska realized. She had been patient, but they were past the boundaries of patience. He resisted an impulse to turn and feast his eyes upon her beauty as a change from the cityscape. That was the problem. There would be so little change in trading one prospect of beauty for another. While Mieri fidgeted, he continued to delay. Was there no alternative? Mieri had left her own pleadings unvoiced, but Biska had heard them in every word she uttered. This was Mieri's own city. She had been born here, beauty born in beauty. Where was the medical point of entry in this city? Biska allowed his frustration to escape in a sigh. The city played its horizontal lines across the hills with an architecture that opened outward, that expanded, that condemned no human within its limits to a containerized existence. The choice of where every element should stand had been made with masterful awareness of the human psyche. Where things that grew without man's interference should grow, there they were. Where structures would amplify existing forms, there stood the required structures, precisely. Every expectation of the human senses had been met, and it was in this very conformity to human demands that the cancerous flaw arose. Yeska shook his head sadly. If conformity were the definition of artistic survival. As he had anticipated, Mieri moved closer behind him, said, Sometimes when I see it from out here, I think my city is too beautiful. Words choke in my throat. I long for words to describe it, and there are none. Her voice rang with musical softness in the quiet evening air. Bieska thought, My city. She had said it and not hurt herself saying it. A city doctor could have no city. He said, Many have tried and failed. Even photographs fall short of the reality. A supreme hollow-paint artist might capture it, but only for a fleeting moment.
I wish every human in the universe could see my city,
Mieri said. I do not share that wish, Bieska said, and he wondered if this bald statement was enough to shock her into the required state of awareness. She wanted to be a city doctor? Let her stretch into the inner world as well as the outer. He sensed her weighing his words. Beauty could play such a vitalizing role in human life that the intellect tended to overlook its devitalizing possibilities. If beauty could not be ignored, was that not indiscreet? The fault was blatancy. There was something demandingly immodest about the way this city gilded its hills, adding dimension to the peaks behind it. One saw the city and did not see it. Mieri knew this, Bieska told himself. She knew it as she knew that Bieska loved her. Why not? Most men who saw her loved her and desired her. Why had she no lovers then? And why had her city no immigrants? Had she ever put both of these questions to herself, setting them in tension against each other? It was the sort of thing a city doctor must do. The species knew the source of its creative energy. The second law made the source plain. He said, Mieri, why does a city doctor have such awesome powers? I can have the memories of whole populations obliterated, selectively erased, or have individuals thus treated. I can even cause death. You aspired to such powers. Why do we have them? She said, To make sure that the species faces up to infinity. He shook his head sadly. A rote answer. She gave him a rote answer when he demanded personal insight. The awareness that had made Bieska a city doctor pervaded him. Knowledge out of his most ancient past told him the builders of this city had succeeded too well. Call it chance or fate. It was akin to the genetic moment that had produced Mieri's compelling beauty, the red gold hair, the green eyes, the female proportions applied with such exactitude that a male might feast his senses but never invest his flesh. There existed a creative peak that alarmed the flesh. Bieska stood securely in his own stolid, round-faced ugliness, knowing this thing. Mieri must find that inner warmth that spoke with chemical insistence of latent wrinkles and aging. What would Mieri do if her city died before its time? If she was ever to be a city doctor, she must be made to understand this lesson of the flesh and the spirit. He said, Do you imagine there's a city more beautiful in the entire world? She thought she heard bantering in his voice and wondered, Is he teasing? It was a shocking thought. City doctors might joke to keep their own sanity in balance, but at such a time as this, with so much at stake. There must be a city more beautiful somewhere, she said.
Where?
She took a deep breath to put down profound disquiet. Are you making fun of my city? She demanded. How can you? It's a sick city, and you know it. She felt her lips quiver, moisture at the corners of her eyes. She experienced both fear and shame. She loved her city, but it was sick. The outbreaks of vandalism, the lack of creativity here, the departure of the best people, the blind violence from random elements of its citizenry when they moved to other settings, all had been traced back here. The sickness had its focus in her city. That was why a city doctor had come. She had worked hard to have that doctor be Bieska, her old teacher, and more than the honor of working with him once more had been involved. She had felt a personal need. "I'm sorry," Bieska said. "This is the city where you were born, and I understand your concern. I am the teacher now. I wish to share my thought processes with you. What is it we must do most carefully as we diagnose?" She looked across the water at the city, feeling the coolness of onrushing nightfall, seeing the lights begin to wink on, the softness of low structures and blended greenery, the pastel colors and harmony. Her senses demanded more than this, however. You did not diagnose a city just by its appearance. Why had Bieska brought her here? The condition of a city's inhabitants represented a major concern. Transient individuals, always tenants on the land, were the single moving cells. Only the species owned land, owned cities. A city doctor was hired by the species. In effect, he diagnosed the species. They told him the imprint of the setting. It had been a gigantic step toward infinity when the species had recognized that settings might contribute to its illnesses. "Are you diagnosing me to diagnose the city?" she asked. "I diagnose my own reactions," he said. "I find myself loving your city with a fierce protectiveness that at the same time repels me and insists that I scar this place. Having seen this city, I will try to find pieces of it in every other city. But I will now know what I seek, because I have not really experienced this city. Every other city will be found wanting, and I will not know what it wants." Mieri felt suddenly threatened and wondered, "What is he trying to tell me?" There was threat in Bieska's words. It was as though he had been transformed abruptly into a dirty old man who demanded obscene things of her, who affronted her. He was dangerous. Her city was too good for him. He was a square, ugly little man who offended her city whenever he entered it. Even as these reactions pulsed through her awareness, she sensed her training taking its dominant place. She had been educated to become a city doctor. The species relied on her. Humans had given her a matrix by which to keep them on the track through infinity. "This is the most beautiful city man has ever conceived," she whispered, and she felt the betrayal in every word coming from her lips. Surely there were more beautiful places in their world. Surely there were. "If it were only that," Bieska said. "If it were only the conception of beauty in itself." She nodded to herself, the awareness unfolding. The second law told humans that absolutes were lethal. They provided no potential, no differences in tension that the species could employ as energy sources. Change and growth represented necessities for things that lived. A species lived. Humans dared conceive of beauty only in the presence of change. Humans prevented wars, but not absolutely. Humans defined crimes and judgments, but only in that fluid context of change. "I love the city," she said. "No longer my city," Bieska thought. "Good." He said, "It's right to love the place where you were born. That's the way it is with humans. I love a little community on a muddy river, a place called Eel Town. Sometimes when the filters aren't working properly, it smells of pulpwood and the digesters. The river is muddy because we farm its watershed for trees. Recapturing all of that muddy silt and replacing it on the hill terraces is hard work and costly in human energy. But it gives human beings places where they fit into the order that we share with the rest of the world. We have points of entry. We have things we can change. Someday we'll even change the way we exchange the silt energy. There's an essential relationship between change and exchange that we have learned to appreciate and use. Mieri felt like crying. She had spent 15 years in the single-minded pursuit of her profession, and all for what purpose? She said, "Other cities have been cured of worse than this." Pyuska stared meditatively at the darkening city. The sun had moved onto the horizon while he and Mieri talked. Now its light painted orange streamers on the clouds in the west. There would be good weather on the morrow, provided the old mariner's saying was correct. The city had become a maze of lights in a bowl of darkness, with the snow peaks behind it reflecting the sunset. Even in this transition moment, the place blended with its environment in such a way that the human resisted any disturbance, even with his own words. Silence choked him. Dangerous silence. Mieri felt a breaking tension within her, a product of her training and not of her city. The city had been her flesh, but was no longer.
"Humans have always been restless animals," Pyuska said. "A good thing, too. We both know what's wrong here. There's such a thing as too much comfort, too much beauty. Life requires the continuing struggle. That may be the only basic law in the living universe."
Again, she sensed personal threat in his words. Pyuska had become a dark shadow against the city's lights. Too much beauty? That spoke of the context in which the beauty existed, against which the beauty stood out. It was not the beauty itself, but the lack of tensions in this context. She said, "Don't offer me any false hopes."
"I offer you no hopes at all," he said. "That's not the function of a city, Doctor. We just make sure the generative tensions continue. If there are walls, we break them down. But walls happen. To try to prevent them can lead us into absolutes. How long have outsiders learned to love your city only to hate it?"
She tried to swallow in a throat suddenly dry.
"How long?"
he insisted. She forced herself to answer. "At first, when I saw hate, I asked why, but people denied it."
"Of course they did."
"I doubted my own senses at times," she said. "Then I noted that the most talented among us moved away. Always it was for good reasons. It was so noticeable, though, that our council chairman said it was cause for celebration when I returned here for my internship. I hadn't the heart to tell him it wasn't my doing, that you had sent me."
"How did they react when you told them I was coming?"
She cleared her throat. "You understand, I had made some suggestions for adjustments within the city, changes in flow patterns and such."
"Which were not taken seriously," he said.
"No, they wonder at my discontent." She stared across at the lights. It was full dark now. Night birds hummed after insects above them. "The hate has been going on for many years. I know that's why you sent me here."
"We need all of the city doctors we can generate," he said. "We need you."
She recognized the "we" in his statement with mounting terror. That was the species talking through a city doctor whose powers had been tempered in action. The individual could be transformed or shattered by that "we." "The councilmen only wanted to be comforted," she protested. But a voice within her pleaded, "Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me."
She knew Pyuska heard that other voice. "How naive of them," he said, "to want to be told that truth is untruth, that what the senses report must not be believed." He inhaled a deep breath. "Truth changes so rapidly that it's dangerous to look only in one direction. This is an infinite universe."
Mieri heard her teeth chattering, tried to still them. Fear drove her now, and not the sudden cold of nightfall. She felt a trembling all through her body. Something Bjuska had once said came back to her now.
"It requires a certain kind of abandoned courage even to want to be a city doctor."
"Do I have that courage?" she asked herself. "Humanity, help me! Will I fail now?"
Bjuska, turning to face her in the darkness, detected a faint odor of burning. Someone from the city had a forbidden fire somewhere along the beaches. The tension of protest rode on that odor, and he wondered if that tension carried the kind of hope that could be converted into life. Mieri no longer was visible in the darkness. Night covered the perfection of her beauty and the clothing that was like armor in its subtle harmonizing with her flesh. Could she ask how rather than why? Would she make the required transition? He waited, tense and listening. "Some of them will always hate," she whispered.
"She knows," he thought.
He said, "The sickness of a city reaches far beyond its boundaries." Mieri clenched her fists, trembling. "The arm is not sick without the body being sick." Bjuska had said that once. "And a single human unloved can set the universe afire." "Life is in the business of constructing dichotomies," she told herself, "and all dichotomies lead to contradictions. Logic that is sound for a finite system is not necessarily sound for an infinite system." The words from the city doctor's creed restored a measure of her calm. She said, "It'll take more than a few adjustments.
It's like a backfire with which our ancestors stopped a runaway grass fire," he said. "You give them a bad case of discontent. No comfort whatsoever, except that you love the human in each of them. Some contradictions do lead to ugliness."
He heard her moving in the darkness. Cloth ripped. Again. He wondered, which of the infinite alternatives has she chosen? Would she scar the brittle armor of her beauty?
"I will begin by relocating the most contented half of the city's population," she said.
"I will," he thought. It was always thus the city doctor began his creation.
"There's no profit in adjusting their memories," she said. "They're more valuable just as they are. Their present content will be the measure of their future energies."
Again he heard her clothing rip. What was she doing?
She said, "I will, of course, move in with you during this period, and present at least the appearance of being your mistress. They will hate that."
He sensed the energy she had required to overcome personal barriers, and he willed himself to remain silent. She must win this on her own, decide on her own.
"If you love me, it will be more than appearance," she said. "We have no guarantee that we will create only beauty. But if we create with love, and if our creation generates new life, then we can love, and we will go on living."
He felt the warmth of her breath on his face. She had moved closer without his hearing. He willed himself to remain immobile.
"If the people of this city must hate, and some of them always will," she said, "better they hate us than one another."
He felt a bare arm go around his neck. Her lips found his cheek.
"I will save our city," she said. "And I don't believe you will hate me for it."
Bjuska relaxed. enfolded her unarmored flesh in his arms. He said, "We begin with unquestioning love for each other. That is a very good prescription, Doctor. My love. As long as there remains sufficient energy to support the next generation. Beauty be damned! Life requires a point of entry."